This is East Carolina All-American Brian Packard, and we're talking Pirate Baseball and the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate Baseball.
Welcome into Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective, brought to you by Next Level Training Center, where players train in Greenville. And definitely check out their website, nextleveltc.com. I have Trent Brent on here later on the show. Right now, though, we have our dear friend, play-by-play voice of the Pirates, Corey Glure. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing a lot better. Hey, Kyle Barber, what's up?
What's going on, Dave? The Pirates go 4-0 on the weekend. They did not choke, unlike Dave Richmond.
Oh, you've been waiting. You stayed up all night for that one. Thank you very much. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up?
Not a whole lot, guys. Another excellent week for the Pirates. I'm looking forward to discussing it.
No doubt. What a big week, Corey, as you have, you know, everybody was like talking about Memphis actually played well. And definitely competitive in three out of the four games, I would say. And then it's like one of those things where I think Coach Godwin, I'll say this, I love how he is focusing, making people focus on it doesn't matter who the opponent is. We just have to play to our level each and every week. So it doesn't matter if it's Memphis or, in fact, I had someone ask me, they said, you know how some teams play down to the competition? And they were saying this weekend they were hoping that ECU would not play down to, you know, down to Memphis. But I thought Memphis played a lot better than we expected.
I thought Memphis played great, and they probably could have easily won two of these games, if not three of them. And, you know, prior to Friday's doubleheader, I got stopped on the concourse of Clark LeClaire after I did my pregame with Cliff Godwin, and someone stopped me. And they said, should be a 4-0 weekend this weekend, right? And I said, I don't know. Like it's baseball. Like you just don't know how it's going to work out from game to game, let alone four games in 3 days. And yeah, that first game looked simple and it was a shorter game because of it. The start of the second game looked like it was going to be similar in that regard. But after a lightning delay on Friday night, then things really for the whole series kind of took a turn. Memphis kind of settled in after that delay and they were in every single part of the last three games of that series. And I think this was a great test for the Pirates where a team played up to them and was ready to punch them a few times in the throat. And now how do they respond to it? And they responded every time. So that's the nature of the sport. That's the nature of this conference. You don't have to look that far outside of what happened this weekend here in Greenville to see that anything is doable here in college baseball. Georgia took 2 of 3 at Vanderbilt. Like that should have never happened, but they not only took 2 of 3, they blew out two wins. So that's going to happen, but it hasn't happened to East Carolina here in conference play. So do not take that for granted here.
Yeah, Corey, we'll obviously go in order, but we'll jump around a little bit here first. You talk about the second game of the doubleheader with the lightning delay. We jumped out hot. I believe it was 4-0 before the lightning came. By the way, don't get me started on the lightning roll. I get it, but if it's east of us, it ain't coming towards us anyway. It kind of took us out of we lost focus, and you come back and you come back in Memphis. You know, their starting pitcher, who's a good one, got in rhythm. We made little mistakes. We just nothing seemed to go our way. But because of the depth of the pitching staff, we were able to just hang in there and wait around, get refocused and win the ball game. It, you know, and one thing Bub and I were talking about, and just something that concerns me, and God, you know, you're nitpicking at this point to have any concerns, but we do seem to lose focus at times. Our pitching staff is unbelievable. But at the plate, we have the ability to score a lot of runs, and you got to credit the other team's pitching also. But at times, we seem to lose focus at points of the game at the plate. And, you know, you can do that against Memphis and get away with it. But, you know, maybe against Wichita or, you know, when you get into postseason play, we're going to need to stay dialed in at the plate the whole game. And I know 4-0 in the week, what am I complaining about? It's just something I noticed that we seem to lose focus every now and then. And thankfully, we have strong pitching that can bail us out until we get our focus back.
Yeah, I think you're right, Kyle. That game two on Friday, they did lose sight of what was happening. I think that they went into, and it completely felt like it, the start of game two felt like how game one was going, where it looked like they were just going to run away and hide and make that a really easy day at the ballpark. But then when the delay hits, Memphis kind of calmed down after that. And their ace, who was on the mound and got knocked around prior to that delay, they looked great after that, Blake Wimberly. So, yeah, I think there was a loss of focus there heading out of that Lightning delay game two. And that has happened a few times. We've mentioned a few of the midweek games that happened earlier this year where that has occurred. I think what you hit on the key element there on top of that, whereas right now with how this team is playing, they're so strong in so many facets of this sport where, say, there was a slippage of attention from this lineup. Well, then here comes the bullpen to take the slack from them and make sure that they pull that team to a win. Or the game after that where the bullpen gets hit hard and then the lineup comes through and comes through with a real relentless attack at the plate and wins that game late. So right now what you have is, yeah, you may not have, you know, every game it's going to fire on all cylinders like what we saw in game one of this series. But when you have two cylinders firing, like on game two on Friday, that's still really good enough to win a game. And then that happens again Saturday and even happens a little bit again today, although today was just kind of a general pitching duel. This team is so a complete team. That doesn't mean necessarily every game is going to look like that. But when one part of the game takes a little bit of a step downward, there is another element of it to take hold and make sure this team is at least in a position to win.
Yeah. And another thing before we go break down each game, something I've really seemed to notice, and I think a lot of Cliff Godwin teams have been this way. These guys really seem to have fun playing the game. They it obviously is serious and they want to win, but they seem to have a blast playing the game and being around each other. And, you know, when we went in walk-off fashion last night, you know, on the kind of the throwing miscues by Memphis, you know, you see them run out like just like we did against Carolina. You know, the same kind of reaction, running on the field with a cone on their head and celebrating. And that was for a win over Memphis. I mean, it's just cool to see, despite all the expectations, despite the lofty rankings and you know, what the goals are of this team, that just a simple win against Memphis on a Saturday night, they still have fun and celebrate it like it's, you know, a big moment.
That reaction you saw Saturday night following the win was, yeah, the same one that we saw after North Carolina to start this homestand, which feels like forever ago, but it was only a week and a half ago. But it was the same reaction we saw when they walked off on Illinois State or walked off on opening night against Rhode Island. Like, this team has been very close for a long time. And this was one of the things that was keyed on by Cliff Godwin from last summer and the end of last season, how quick that came to an end. But this team became really, really close in spite of the distance that was put between them. They became such a strong unit even before they returned to campus this past fall, where you see that, where it's not just, you know, banding together to win games like we saw this weekend and win them in exciting fashion, but they're around each other all the time, off the field as well. This is a group that genuinely likes being around each other. And so the competition drives them to be great. And then they can go and hang out afterward because they're just friends together as well. They have a blast being around each other. It's been, you're right, it's been a huge theme of Cliff Godwin's tenure here, and that's why so many former players come back in the off season and they're training and they're around the program and they're talking to this program. Before this homestand started, former pitcher Evan Krasinski like zoomed in for a meeting with the team and talked to them. Like, this is kind of a brotherhood now, this baseball program. And it goes to the team that's currently in place now, as well as the teams that have been here in the past.
Saka, one thing before we break down, I know we've been saying that for a handful of minutes now, and Bubba, I know we're going to get to it just a second. But I wanted to ask you about something you and Coach O, we've been, and people have been talking about all week. So I know they want us to talk about it here on the show, so I don't forget. Can we talk about the predetermined sites for the regionals? I know that something we would normally hear Memorial Day with a selection show, it looks like that we're going to not know that, but they're going to predetermine the sites. I know the due date is tomorrow, right, for all the colleges.
I did not know about that. Say what now, who, where?
Yeah, here, let's clue Kyle into what's going on here. Because it will take a few weeks to get stadiums and host sites up to COVID protocols, the NCAA is accepting bids for host sites for regional and super regional this year, and they'll be announcing them. I believe it's May the 11th is when they'll be announcing sites. So it will not be on Memorial Day like what we've seen in years past. So they'll be announcing the 16 regional sites early on, so 2 weeks into May, as opposed to wait until the end of the regular season. So, yeah, and you're right, Dave, bids are due by tomorrow. And, you know, I've heard bits and pieces about East Carolina and them putting a bid together. They're obviously putting a bid in. Like, there's no question about that. And they've shown they can host a regional. And so, you know, right now we only have the D1 baseball report as to what the NCAA will be basing this off of. And what that report is merit is the majority of what we'll be deciding here. And then location will be the secondary element. And then, you know, beyond that, I don't know if the NCAA will be looking at attendance minimums, because that's a big part of this too. Different states have different attendances right now for their events. So I think that the initial reaction around Pirate Nation was negative. And that was, yeah, when I first read it, I was a little bit caught off guard as well by it. But when push comes to shove, and now we can say this even more after this weekend, East Carolina is still in a fantastic position here to be a regional or even a super regional host site. They have proven it with what they've done on the field. And location-wise, the closest school that would be hosting a regional right now would be South Carolina. No other North Carolina schools are in the mix at the moment. Virginia Tech is maybe on the bubble right now. They'd have to go on a run here to make a real strong push to be a host team. But it's South Carolina and it's East Carolina. And so there are going to be teams in this Southeast region here north of Florida that will need places to go for regionals. So I think East Carolina is still in a very good spot here to be a regional host, because they've proven on the field, they've proven they can host regionals. And right now there aren't teams in the Triangle that are also in a spot where they can host. So I think the initial reaction was surprising. I think now that we're a couple days in and we've learned a little bit more about what they're looking for, I'm not too worried about East Carolina being left out of the mix right now. Now, that could change. The NCAA could come out with other criteria here that we're not aware of and we're not going to release publicly. But right now, East Carolina has done everything that they've needed to do to prove that even announcing an early host site, they're still going to be one of the 16. So, you know, we'll see. Obviously, nothing's certain, but I'm not as concerned as I think some other people might have been.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. Even if it works out for us, I still don't like it. I get it, I guess. To me, I mean, COVID protocol is COVID protocol, and I guess you got to make sure you can isolate and whatever you're going to do in terms of, you know, hotels. And I don't think we'll go as far as the NCAA basketball tournament. But
right,
to me, if you're that worried about it, choose neutral sites. Just choose 16 neutral sites and play ball. That way, yeah, there's no. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to cut you off and interrupt, but I think what will be fascinating here is, you know, every state has different protocols at the moment. Right now, North Carolina is 50% capacity for outdoor events. Now that could change by first weekend of June, which is when the first week, which would have been regional weekend, be. But you know, if the NCAA is doing this for COVID protocol reasons, which is what they're doing here, they said they need 3 weeks to prepare a site for what they're going to be putting in place here. And that's why it's coming out in May 11th instead of Memorial Day, and only giving a week to prepare. Will they, you know, they aren't doing a minimum requirement or a money requirement to submit a bid this year, which is good news, because some schools just buy a bid, and they aren't right now seem to be looking for an attendance number. But Will they use, say, we're doing this for COVID protocol reasons, and then say bring a regional to Texas, which is why it's open right now? Like that, that's the sort of thing that I'm going to be interested in seeing as we move forward through this.
Right.
I think the natural reaction is from, you know, my experience here around Greenville was that there's going to be something stacked against East Carolina here. The only thing I can say in response to that is that East Carolina has done literally everything they can do to show that not only are they warranting of a host, but they better be a host site when this is all announced on May 11th, because they've shown their success on the field. There's nobody else around them that is really bidding against them to host right now. And they've shown they can host a regional, a couple of them here of late. So, and even host a super regional. So again, like, I hope some fears are quelled here over the last week. Again, we won't know until May the 11th, but I would be right now pretty surprised if East Carolina was not certainly and firmly entrenched in this discussion here to be one of the 16.
Yeah, and if COVID protocol, you know, is the reason around this, and, you know, we are 50% capacity, like you said, Texas is wide open. So, in theory, they shouldn't want to put a regional in Texas.
If they want to say COVID protocols for extra safety here, then they shouldn't be putting one in Texas. Like that's sort of the dichotomy here, of putting one in Mississippi. Ole Miss should be hosting a regional this year, but, you know, they're wide open. And so, you know, Mississippi State, obviously, as well. So what is the NCAA actually putting forth here? We don't know all of this publicly. We only know what Kendall Rogers told us on Monday. I don't know if we'll find out all the answers, and certainly this will be ever evolving, but when push comes to shove, if East Carolina is not in the host mix come May 11th, I would be extremely surprised.
Yeah, and are they going to look at hotels? Are they going to be able to isolate, you know, like I said, I don't think they'll go as far as they did in Indianapolis for basketball.
Yeah, they would have done something more restrictive if we're talking about a basketball bubble here, like what we saw for the men's and women's tournament. They would have done like four regionals in one location, that sort of thing. Like they would have really condensed things out. Whereas this is going more kind of the hockey tournament route, where they're going to try and do loose bubbles and announce sites earlier, but still not try and change much of it and still go to Omaha when all is said and done. I mean, hopefully, knock on wood, by end of May, when this is all going to get started, we're, you know, maybe not fully out of the woods, but the daylight's pretty strong when it comes to this. So by that point, things might look a lot rosier here. And hopefully by that point, we're still talking about an ECU regional here. The difference this year is that we're finding out a few weeks earlier instead of Memorial Day.
And Corey, another thing that, you know, I would hope the NCAA would be looking at, if this is all COVID related, does the school have a medical school, and can they provide, you know, adequate, you know, COVID testing, and how easy is it to get COVID? And I know that that's all a lot easier now than it was, you know, even 6 months ago, but we do have a medical school and we do have those facilities available and all that kind of stuff on hand easily. So maybe that'll play in our favor. I just don't like it, particularly this year, when a lot of people are projecting us, at least early right now, to be a national seed, as it used to be called. I don't know if that terminology is still used, the top eight seed.
Yes.
And, you know, in position to host a super, and just watch somehow they'll screw us out of hosting a regional. I mean, being a pirate, you just automatically assume you're going to get screwed out of something somehow.
That's NC State.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally.
State fans always do that.
Yeah. It's, there are kind of two parts there, and Bubba's chomping the bit to break down the weekend. I apologize, Bubba. But first things first, I don't know if it'll necessarily be, you know, I'm not in the NCAA room here, but, you know, it's one thing to have a medical school attached to the university here that might be bidding to host. But I think it might be more based on what conferences have set up in terms of their testing protocols already. American teams test three times a week, and every team that comes into Greenville this year in the non-conference play had to do that three times a week testing. And so maybe it'll be just something like that, where what was the baseline for these programs throughout the year in terms of testing, and that determines some of the capability of what they can do. On top of that, East Carolina has a great medical school, has a great hospital attached to it here as well. So listen, the case is strong for Greenville. Like, there's no way around that. And if the NCAA is turning down East Carolina. There are other circumstances we're not thinking about, and when it comes to that. Now, on the other side of the equation, the couple of things we aren't knowing a lot about is what the NCAA is doing in terms of the seeding purposes here. From what I've understood, they're announcing 16 host sites on May the 11th. They're not seeding anybody then.
Yeah.
That's from my point of view. That might be different behind closed doors, but that doesn't mean, like, you know, if the Pirates, say, continue on this run and they finish first in the American in the regular season and go deep in Clearwater or win the conference tournament, like, they built their resume to be a top eight seed, but we don't know if the NCAA is going to be doing that again this year, and they certainly don't seem to be announcing who will be super regional sites on May 11th, at least from what I've heard right now. Now, they might come out and say, here are your 16 sites for the regional, here are your eight sites for the super regionals. I don't know yet. But from what I've understood, they aren't locking everything into ink right away here. They're just trying to find their 16 right now, and then they'll start parsing out from there. Everyone's going to be picked majority wise on merit. And so the 16 that are picked here, at least right now, are in that discussion to be a super regional team anyway. And so as the rest of the year goes along, some teams will shift around and moved up and down and that sort of thing. And maybe East Carolina is still in that mix to be not just regional, but super regional host. We just don't know. That's the unknown here with the NCAA play. So that I understand the apprehension on.
One thing I can guarantee you is going to happen. You can certify it, lock it, write it down, put it on paper, save this broadcast, mark the tape. Somebody's going to get a host site May 11th and going to fall apart and host as a three seed. Mark it down right now.
I mean, that's the other factor is teams can host and not be in the tournament or not be at that regional. Now, I would be floored if, you know, I'll pull out a hypothetical here. Let's say, let's go with Stanford. Let's say Stanford is picked as a host site and then they fall off the planet here in the last couple of weeks and suddenly they shouldn't be a top 16 seed. I would be shocked if the NCAA moves them out of their regional, but it's possible. And so that was something stated on the report. A team and a school could host this tournament and not be a part of their own site. So would that happen? I would be surprised, but that doesn't mean it's off the table.
Yeah, I would hope not. I would hope that they would just put the school as like a three or a two and host. But you never know. I mean, we many, many moons ago back in 99, they awarded East Carolina by giving us the number one seed in Baton Rouge. So
that happened a few years ago to Missouri State. Like, their ballpark was taken up as a minor league park, and so they had to go to Arkansas for their super regional, and they got their doors knocked in. And so, like, yeah, that's happened in the past, but it's been extenuating circumstances. This would certainly be other extenuating circumstances. I guess to put a final point on this discussion, and it will continue to evolve here over the next couple of weeks, East Carolina has done all they've needed to do, even with these new rules in place, and they will continue to do all they need to do here, and that includes submitting a bid by tomorrow if they haven't already. So if they have laid all their chips out on the table by this point, even though it's earlier than we were anticipating.
Yeah, and another thing, I wonder, is that something Cliff and the guys are discussing? Hey, guys, we need to show out now because, we need to look as good as we can before May 11th.
No, I don't think so. I think they know the picture. I think they're aware of what's in front of them, and the only way they can accomplish that is by knocking down a win at a time. Like, I think they're cognizant. Listen, I know the players are aware of what was announced this past week. Like, I totally am aware of that. The coaches certainly are as well, and they've probably been in discussions with the administration here as well about moving forward with this. But nothing has changed about the plan of attack, about what they're doing. They went out, they took care of business this weekend against Memphis. They will try and do so again this weekend at Houston. The changes to what the NCAA is doing to the NCAA tournament selection is not affecting that at all.
All right, Bubba, you ready to break down the
series? Hey, Bubba, how are you?
Yeah.
I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
Bubba, are you still in pre-production for your next show?
I am. Yeah. Multitasking here.
All right. Well, we'll take a look at Friday night's games, Bubba. Do you have some numbers in front of you? Or if not, I'm sure Corey does.
You know, the first thing I wanted to bring up, taking a look at game one of that doubleheader when the Pirates won by a run rule, is Gavin Williams, like Coach Godwin said after the game, and you can see those post-game remarks by going to our YouTube channel if you haven't already seen them. But Coach Godwin just talked about how Gavin didn't have his best stuff, but, I mean, then you see what, in five innings, he still struck out 9 batters. He did walk one and hit 2, but still a solid start for sure.
Here are the number of pitches that Gavin Williams had on Friday afternoon. That's all he had. He had a fastball. He had a slider. That's it. And he was still able to do that. I mean, he is legit ace-level national ace pitcher right now. I mean, he was able to push aside the fact that his changeup wasn't going. He was able to push aside that his occasional curveball, which he flashes – occasionally was just not there for the taking, and he still was able to really lock things down against that Memphis lineup. A Memphis lineup that, as we saw as we came along, can barrel up. Like they barreled up a ton over the course of the weekend. I mean, the dude's a stud. Like, I mean, and in years past, he would have probably let the fact that, you know, half of his arsenal wasn't working, he would have let that get to him. That's different this year. And D1 Baseball had a piece on him after Friday's game. They were there and watching him. And the key thing that Jason Dietrich, pitching coach, said is something's unlocked in that kid. Like up here, something's different now, where he can go with the flow of a game. And if there's suddenly some adversity, it doesn't matter to him. He'll find a way to battle through it. And he had to do it with only 50% of his ability really going on Friday. I mean, that slider can be a power pitch for him, and we've seen that over the last 3 weeks. And if he can get that changeup back to back that up and then flash a 12-6 curveball just out from time to time, then the sky's the limit for the guy.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about the run rolling him, you know, did it late in the eighth inning, and Memphis seemed perplexed. I guess the umpiring crew understood the rule. Everybody seemed not to know what the hell was going on except the Pirates.
It was the reverse from our position. Memphis seemed to – I think the players were a little bit confused because maybe that wasn't translated to them. Darren Schoenrock knew what was happening there. Initially, it didn't look like it to me, but he came out of the dugout looking at his watch. So he was trying to find a game two start time. That's what he was doing. So he was aware of what was going on. The umpires didn't seem to have a clue. And that was a new one. And so,
what in the world?
So when Cliff came out and just like, hey, the team's celebrating, that sort of thing, he had to kind of explain to Wilson Rayner, who was the crew chief, we're done. Like, this game's over. Now we walked off for
– How did the umpires not know the rules of the conference, Corey?
No comment.
Exactly. What in the hell? Yeah, it's poor communication between the conference. And look, I've been critical. First, let me say this. I like Mike Orasco. I think Mike Orasco is a tremendous commissioner. Yeah, but totally. Sometimes I don't think he communicates. I don't think he takes baseball as serious as he should. Let me put it like that.
You know, I've thought that over the years. I think I can't speak for him. I think he is now aware that he has a good baseball league in front of him. It wasn't the design of when this conference came together. It was football first, maybe even football second, and then men's basketball third, with UConn women's basketball helping out that side of the equation. But baseball was never really kind of in the discussion here. What he wound up having is a really, really good baseball league when all was said and done. And so I think over the years, he has become more open to this league, becoming more than just a two-sport conference. And so, you know, I don't want to say, you know, communication from the conference didn't trickle down, because I just don't know that for sure. I will say that a lot of things changed heading into this year. And so the fact that something like that might have gotten lost in the shuffle and didn't cause a consequence, like everyone got back on the same page within 10 seconds on Friday. But the fact that there have been so many different tweaks this year to the rules. Something like that, maybe sliding under the radar a little bit for a couple of seconds, I think that's forgivable. Now, you know, this is not the first run rule already this year the Pirates have had, so they knew what to do. Darren Schoenrock knew what was going on. And Wichita State just had a run rule earlier today. So it's becoming a lot more well-known in the conference what the run rule is. The fact that there are a lot of eccentricities to the rules now this year and something might have gotten lost in translation on Friday night, I'm not surprised because there's not a lot of moving pieces this year.
Do you think Cliff and Wilson Rainer went to tiebreakers after the game?
Well, let me just say this. As someone who maybe was at tiebreakers.
Cheeseburgers. So, you know, I thought maybe
who was at tiebreakers after the game. I did not see either gentleman there. So, Wilson's been behind the plate for a lot of Pirate games already this year. There have been some differences in the strike zone in Cliff's mind, certainly, and maybe in mine as well.
I was going to ask you that, Corey, with the game today, especially, I know there was a point where Coach, there's times when he's not happy, but he really lit into Rainer. I forgot the batter, but it looked like his strike zone was almost at the ankles. I mean, I know that sounds bad for me to say, but it was really, really low strike zone.
Fluctuating strike zone.
Yeah, I forget the batter as well. It was a Pirate batter. And he called a pitch a strike that was at the shin. And that set Cliff off down the third baseline. And listen, like what we've now experienced over 2 weeks of this, it's a very different feeling now this season where it's to pour everything out over 72 hours in four games of baseball, and then you're not playing for 4 or 5 days. Like there's a very different feel now to this year. And so by the end of today's game, I think nerves were kind of frayed by that point for everyone involved. We had seen one team for so long now over the weekend. It had been some long games and long days at the park. And by the end of today's game, it was just, I have no patience, like that sort of thing. And there's the other weird thing about, I think, the umpire setup this year. With a three-man crew, the home plate umpire is getting the first game and the fourth game behind the plate as the crew chief. And so naturally, there's going to be an immediate reaction to a game earlier on in the series coming back for the final game of the series. So I think we did see some tension flare up on both sides of the equation. There was a strikeout to Braden Webb in the seventh today from Cam Fulmore. That was not a strike. It was totally not a strike. And Darren Schoenrock was very upset about it. Like, that's going to build as the season goes along, where I don't know if the conference was probably aware of what might happen there unless they just put a fourth umpire in for each series.
Yeah, and another thing, and I don't know if the Cliff will admit it, but you talk about, playing the four games in 3 days and no midweek games, and to tie things in earlier, we were talking about earlier, it's got to be on Cliff's mind that, we know what we need to do, but we need to do it sooner so we look good to the selection committee. So every game is so critical. We need to win every game we can right now. We don't need you. Yeah, I think it was you that made the comment during the game. I was switching back and forth between the ESPN Plus feed and the radio feed. I believe it was you that made the comment. Or no, it was Coach O. It was Coach O that said, the fans may think winning three is good and we got the series in hand, but no, we need to take all four. It's key that we win every game at home.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally I mean, that was a topic for us throughout the day today. Is that they're 22-1 at home this year. Like that's mind-boggling. That they're like, that's insane how well they've played here at Clark Stadium. Now they go on the road for their final six weekends, plus the conference tournament after that, aren't here. And so you have to hold serve here because the Pirates are 4-4 on the road this year. Like things have happened away from this ballpark this season. So winning three games is frankly the bar to clear right now for East Carolina, and they cleared it twice already in conference play. Will that change now heading on the road for the first time against a struggling club in Houston? I'll tell you what, the ambition hasn't changed. They want to go out and win every day and they can in conference play, and week after week try and sweep every series here. For many teams, winning a series is the success of a weekend. That's not to say it isn't for East Carolina, but with where they want to be, They got to keep the pedal down. And that's why, even though they had a series in hand entering today, winning today was so crucial for them.
Yeah, Corey. And we touched on game two a little bit, but we'll talk about it a little more. You know, we get eight run or a 10 run ruled Memphis game one. So we go into game two, as we touched on earlier, jump on them 4-0. The Lightning was in the East. And so we had the 30-minute delay, come back, lose focus. But pitching kept us in the ball game, and we come away with the win.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, this is one of the first things we touched on here in the show. It seemed like the position players just kind of suddenly they were out of it after that Lightning delay, and they felt like it was going to be smooth sailing that point forward. Well, Blake Wimberly started pitching his tail off, and Memphis started barreling up Carson Wisenhunt. I think that was the biggest key. Was that was about 50 minutes from pitch to pitch for Wisenhunt in that game. Yes. And that's why the delay there early, which pitcher was going to be hampered by that more. It was clearly Carson. Then he was getting rattled by it. And so in comes a couple of veterans out of the bullpen, and then they slam things down. That's what we saw with the Cincinnati series, is the Pirate bullpen just absolutely silencing any sort of comeback effort from the opposition. So Memphis got their runs, and they chipped in and cut it to one in the fifth inning. But then in came this veteran relief corps that all comes back for another year when they could have easily left this year, and they come through for this team. When one thing steps backward a little bit, takes a half step back, another phase of this team seems to take a step forward. And that's a trend that's going to win them a ton of games moving forward.
Now, does Carson, during that 30-minute delay or 50-minute delay, however long it was, does he throw or does he sit, or a combination of the two?
Well, I mean, he's not allowed to do anything in the bullpen until the all clear is given. And they're monitoring the radar. So as long as Lightning is out of that 8-mile radius from the ballpark, and no strikes are happening, he can go and get a little bit of work in. He can also stay loose by throwing, say, in the clubhouse, in the locker room, or the team room. Now, that's different from pitching on a mound, obviously, but he can try and stay warm by doing that. I did see him for a little bit walking around in the dugout about halfway through that delay. I think he was just trying to get an update as to where he was. I think he was also trying to keep just kind of mentally cleared a little bit there as well. But that's kind of a first for him as well as a starting pitcher, having to deal with Mother Nature impacting what was a pretty nice start to his on Friday night as well. So I think we've seen in two conference outings for Carson Wisenhunt, maybe not his best stuff, but a couple of things for him to work on and build forward to as he now has his first road start coming.
And I think Bubba's got a question. He wanted to chime in.
Well, I didn't have a question. One of our viewers, Shale Powell, had a question and said, Corey, now that Hoover is back, how does that impact AMAC in the lineup?
There are not going to be many teams in the nation that have their conference player of the week coming off the bench for two of their four games, and that's what happened this week. Listen, AMAC is going to be involved regularly. Like, I mean, he has shown that he deserves a spot. That means either as a DH, that means getting a start in left field, and Francisco's over to first and Moylan's the DH, like what we saw in the final game earlier on today. That means maybe he's a DH as well. That means maybe he plays a little bit on the infield. I mean, he will find his spot because he's proven that he deserves a spot. What Lane Hoover's return to the lineup does is just strengthen what this lineup is and can do. There's a little bit of an extra gear to this offense when he's in the mix. And we saw that in game one. We also saw that in game four early on today of this series, where this team can do a lot of different things when he is hitting in that top half of the order. Makarevich, listen, like, he has passed all the tests that he's needed to coming into this year. He's not going to lose, you know, he might lose a start here or there, but he's not going to lose much playing time. He warrants being out there regularly.
Corey, kind of going along with Shell's question, you know, talking about the options we have in the outfield now, especially in the way Bryson Worrell's swinging the bat, just kind of going into my next point. Bryson Worrell had two home runs in the doubleheader, also had at least one, if not a couple, doubles. And, man, he's really swinging the bat well from both sides of the plate.
And the key for him this weekend was that he wasn't getting fooled by as many off-speed pitches as what we saw in the first third of this season. Like, he was, everything was on the barrel, and he was laying off pitches in the dirt and not going after a ton of pitches off the outside corner, regardless of by the plate that he was on. I mean, maybe this was the jump start for him to be to what he was. His batting average jumped about 40 points this weekend. Like, that's what he did this weekend. He might be player of the week in the conference this week with what he did, with nine driven in across four games and a couple of home runs. So, you know, he showed power from both sides of the plate. He showed clutch hitting ability. He scored the winning run on Saturday by getting on base five times in that game. Like, the all-around complete baseball player seemed to be back this weekend for Bryson Worrell. And if he's doing this regularly, plus the addition of Lane Hoover, good luck stopping this lineup, because we saw this weekend where they can be almost impossible to hold off when a guy like number 35 is doing what he's doing.
And then you have a guy like Riley Johnson coming off the bench and hitting home runs.
Well, and there, you know, Shell asked the question about Makarevich. I think Riley Johnson, this is now the biggest test for him, because he was getting regular playing time and even starts in the outfield with Hoover out. That's probably not going to be on the table anymore for him. And so how does he respond as a true freshman when coming in now late in games defensively, like we did at the start of the year, and maybe a pinch hitting opportunity like he had earlier on today? Well, he responded pretty well today with a solo home run. And so I know this team and this program loves the potential of what Riley Johnson can be, not just a few years, but this year. Now he might have to take a little bit more of a step back in terms of his regular role with Hoover returning into the mix. But if he's able to stay engaged with what he has been doing as a regular proponent and component of this team, then he's going to be still a very successful piece for this team, even if off the bench.
And by the way, fans, we have the PGX. We have the PGX players of the game, and we have the PGX pitcher of the week, I should say. And we'll have that coming up in a matter of minutes. By the way, Corey Allen Vick said Corey has become one of the best play-by-play voices in the country. I know some other people, including myself, have chimed in on that on Facebook, the comments and questions. So if you have a question or comment for Corey, then put it up there in the comment section.
Yeah, Dave, I'm sure he meant country, but it was almost like Alan was getting a little shot in there at Corey, so he's become one of the best in the county.
I did see that, Alan, and I hope you meant well. I've worked with Alan on a broadcast before, calling play-by-play a couple of years ago. You know, thank you. I appreciate it, whether it's Pitt County or the country. I appreciate the compliment.
You know what? With Jeff Charles here, that's still a good compliment.
And he's damn good, too. So
in the county. You're one of the top two in Pitt County.
I am in the top five of Pitt County.
Well, Alan Vick is a play-by-play.
It's you in The Voice. Corey, yesterday I missed most of game three, but I turned it on just in time to see us blow a three-run lead. I said, well, damn, maybe I should turn it off. That to me was the most impressive thing of the whole weekend, to blow a three-run lead in the eighth and then come back and win it in the bottom of the ninth, like we just knew we were going to do it the whole time.
Yeah, and that's not many of those this year where they've blown a late lead and then had to withstand it. I can think of, I think one against Illinois State maybe comes to mind. But, you know, there haven't been many of those moments this year where the Pirates felt as though they had this one in the bag and even made those late game defensive switches. And then suddenly they're right back into a game, and then it was tied all of a sudden. Like, it got down to one, they pushed it back out to two, and then it was gone. Like, it happened in such a quick amount of time that I think that was quite a fascination, at least for me from the booth, was how are they going to answer back from this? Because now they've dealt with games in which they've been kind of socked a few times. A few of those midweek games where a team just went right after them and they didn't let up. a couple of those games at Georgia Southern earlier on in the year where they were just relentless, you know, inning after inning after inning. But the Pirates had never really been in a spot in which they felt as though they had built up enough of a lead to win a game and then it was gone. And so how they responded to that was pretty important. And I think you're right, Kyle. That was the key to the whole weekend, because Memphis arguably should have won that game. They had the better of the chances by and large all game long. And then East Carolina was able to scrape out some work there in the ninth inning and then get the throwing error to win that game. So that was in a weekend that had a lot of thrilling moments to it. That was the top of the heap right there. And it showed a lot of metal for this team to, when the strength of their team throughout conference thus far, their bullpen was struggling, then the lineup came in and said, "We got you. Like we'll take it from here." And that's, you know, they got great work from Garrett Saylor to close out that game, and that propelled that team in the ninth inning to put some traffic on, create some pressure, and they got the win off of it.
And then you go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, the bullpen, I know that the bullpen, that's one thing that I've been really impressed with, and we thought in the preseason was the very fact how deep our bullpen is this year. And there's been times in the past, maybe not the recent past, but the past where you're a little nervous when the bullpen, that starter comes out. But Corey, it seems like this year, one of the questions I forgot to ask you earlier was the fact that it seems like when that starter comes out, then you feel like, oh, well, we're in really good shape because we have those great guys in the bullpen. Is it me or it just seems different this year?
No drop.
No, you're totally right. I mean, yeah, you're totally right. Kyle hit it on the head. There's no step down. And it doesn't matter right now who they seem to go to. Like, I mean, I'm looking at Saturday's game now. Three of the four pitchers used out of the bullpen were used on Friday. And that was part of why things were a little bit of a battle that night. But you got Carter Spivey in the middle there, who pitched a great inning to work. And then somehow today, they found the right mix to get it done out of the bullpen as well. Like, even when the depth is as tested as they were this weekend, like, they came into today's game with not a lot of availability out of that bullpen. And they still, in what was a 1-1 game to the eighth inning, were able to find a way to piece that all together. There is not a chasm there from the four starting pitchers to what's waiting in the bullpen, to the point where you could probably put four of these guys into one of these starting rotation spots right now. Like that's where this Pirate pitching staff is. That's why, you know, we touched on this last week after the Cincinnati series. Jason Dietrich was so excited about this format because he said, you know what, we have the pitching to maneuver through this. And they have. They've shown us that now through two weekends of conference play, where if a starting pitcher doesn't make it out of the fifth, which happened twice this weekend, no matter, because there's the bullpen to take up the load, to eat up a few innings, keep a game close, and then eventually put them in a spot to win the game.
Corey, I was asked yesterday, a little group I'm in where we discussed Pirate Athletics. It's about 10 of us. And I was asked by somebody who doesn't follow baseball as religiously as I and some others over the years. You know, I've been following Pirate baseball since the 90s. And where does this team rank amongst greatest of all time? And, you know, I said, I think, you know, our story's yet to be told for this year. But, you know, when you look at the 04 team and you look at the 01 team and the 09 team and some of the other good ones a couple years, you know, the 2019 team even, where does this one rank? I say, you know, it's hard to tell. There's no midweek games. The conference is a little down this year. But one thing I can tell you, we have more depth this year than any of those other teams. Maybe not the stars, you know, in the top of the lineup, the Chad Tracy's, et cetera. Maybe not the sexy starting pitchers, but just the depth. There's no drop-off when we go in the bullpen. As you were talking about early, we got guys coming off the bench that could be starting for us, you know, out in the outfield. The depth on this team is just unbelievable. And part of it's COVID, and then part of it's just Cliff doing a good job recruiting.
Yeah, you hit it. I mean, this is the deepest team. This is the most complete team I've seen in my time here. This is my sixth year. And, you know, I think a lot of people look at the 2016 team and how close they were to the College World Series, and kind of put them kind of in a little bit of a ball of light there, when in reality that was a pretty inconsistent team that found the right gear in the postseason. 2019 was an exceptional team, but they didn't have the depth of the pitching that this one does. Now, this offense operates a little bit differently than 19, but now you're starting to see even that change a little bit. The home run power is there here in this lineup. It's just not as prevalent as a Packard or a Brickhouse or a Washer was in 19. But you have Cadell with 10 home runs this year. That's at the top of the conference right now. You have Norby with 9 home runs. And you talk about kind of the big names at the top of the lineup or in this lineup, Kyle. Well, Connor Norby would beg to differ with you at the moment. He's one of the nation's best players at the moment. And there's Thomas Francisco as well, who homered over the weekend, and he's the second best hitter in the conference right now. And then you have your ace level pitcher. You had Jake Agnos in 2019. You have Gavin Williams now this year, and then you have kind of the people behind him. But then
that's what it is, Corey. Maybe because there is so damn much depth, nobody stands out to me. There's one or two big stars because everybody's good.
Absolutely. That's the key to this whole thing. And it hit. We were talking about this in the post game show today, where every single game this weekend was different, and they won it in different ways because this team is equipped to win games in every possible way you can throw at them. You throw them a slugfest like Saturday, they find a way to win it. You throw them an offensive barrage like they did in game one on Friday, they're going to win it. You throw them a pitcher's duel like today, they're going to win it. Like, it's just, there isn't a style of game that they're not suited for right now. And that's just damn scary, frankly, for a lot of other teams that maybe are looking at East Carolina with a bit of a side-eye glance, saying, well, you're playing in the American, it's down this year. Well, also, guess what? In the last week and a half, things have really trended up for the American with what Wichita State has been doing. The American's now fifth in the country in terms of RPIs at conference. That changed from 2 weeks ago where they were seventh. So now things are beginning to shift a little bit more, and the American is working its way upward. And so now it's going back to the selection committee thing. It's impossible to ignore what East Carolina has been doing right now on the field. And if there is a team out there that thinks they found a way to beat this Pirates team, well, prove it, because they have shown, and they showed us in 3 days this weekend, you can do any sort of game that you want, and the Pirates are going to be a little bit better than you at it.
Corey, and sorry, Bob, I didn't mean to step on you there. I've been talking a lot, but I did want to point this out, just to toot my own horn, toot, toot. But, I was talking to you, Corey, or all you guys, but I addressed you with this, Corey. That was either last weekend or weekend before. If Wichita gets hot, that could be really good for the Pirates,
yep.
And it looks like it's happening.
Yeah, and I thought about the discussion today as I was watching Wichita run the score on Houston earlier on today, where, Wichita State's now in quad one with what they've done here over the last 2 weeks, and that has bumped the conference up in the standings. And you're bang on, Kyle. Instead of the slugfest in this conference that we're so used to seeing week in and week out, listen, we're only 2 weeks in, but that's 25% of the year. We're already done with conference play, knocked out with what we've done here. And we have seen two teams rise to the top. Now, Tulane will get their chance to answer here after being off this whole weekend, and they have Wichita coming in this weekend, and they're 3-1 right now. So Tulane will have their opportunity here to prove that they belong in this discussion as well. But right now, the conference has elevated because two teams have kind of taken hold of the situation and run with it.
Corey, looking at the mental toughness of this team, the willingness to accept roles, and that's kind of the direction you were going with what you and Coach O were talking about in the post game, winning games in different ways and so forth. You had Matt Bridges pinch running, making an excellent slide. Otherwise, he's thrown out. You have Cam Colmore, he had multiple 3-0 counts that he worked his way back from. You look at his line, it doesn't tell the whole story, and, just some of the jams that he pitched his way out of. You have Josh Moreland, a freshman who struck out three times, and then with a 1-1 game in the eighth inning, against Memphis's stud, who struck out, 30 and 17 innings of work. He chops the ball over the first baseman for the two RBI, what proved to be the game-winning single.
It was this game was a blast today. Like, if you were able to tune in, this was one fun game. Like, if you are locked in as a Pirate fan, if you're watching as a Memphis fan, or if you were unbiased, that was a great game today. And the fact that, listen, the Pirates were not hitting Chris Durham. Like, that wasn't even a question. He was absolutely carving this team. A home run mistake in the first inning to Cadell. He left a fastball sitting up on the inner third, and Cadell's going to obliterate that more often than not. But then after that, just a base hit here, a base hit here. Yeah, there's a walk, but it doesn't matter. Here's a double play. Like, he was in such command. And I think the Moylan at-bat there, Bubba, is such a key to this whole game, because that's a seventh-year senior that was pitching today. He started his collegiate career, I don't know, probably in the G.W. Bush administration. Like, he has been around a long time. He really did start in the Obama administration. I mean, he was toying with Moylan today. Like, that's what he was doing. That was a veteran toying with a true freshman who was an exceptionally talented young man. But that was a guy who has been through everything, including maybe the end of his career. And he said, nah, you got a ways to go here. And he had him fooled all day long. And then in comes maybe a better pitcher in Walker Brockhaus. And Moylan's able to get a hold of one and chop one over a drawn in Taylor Howell to eventually win the game. That shows a level of what he is as a ball player and what he can do to cleanse out what's been a frustrating day and still come through in a big spot in a situation where he's not in a lot of those positions at ends of games. He's lifted by that point for defensive purposes, but he was in a spot to come through, and he came through with the biggest hit of his career so far.
Corey, I'm about to call you Coach. Corey, when Durham started, when he enrolled in college, Lincoln Riley was the offensive coordinator at East Carolina.
He enrolled in college, he went to Central Arkansas. I think Scottie Pippen was still playing basketball there.
No, but seriously.
Yeah,
I
mean, you're totally right. Yeah, it was 2014. Yeah, that's when Durham started off there. And then he spent 2 years there, transferred and got injured a few years. And he's finally pitching his tail off. I mean, he was an AAC second teamer in 2019. Like, this is no slouch for him. And he could not have been more in command all day long. And the Pirates finally able just got a little bit off of him. An infield single by Norby. And then Francisco, maybe with the most important out of the whole game, a two-strike offer off the outside corner. He sends to left field for a base hit. That knocks him out of the game. And the Pirates get a right-hander to see, albeit a great one, in Brockhaus. And then they went to work on him.
Yeah, Corey, I know a lot of times you'll check out our On Deck, our weekly preview. And this week when I caught up with Darren Schoenrock, he was laughing when he was telling me about Durham and being a seventh-year guy. I said, yeah, Coach, and we have a few six-year guys. And I talked about Colmore, Bridges, et cetera. But I said, you look at him, I said, I really don't think I've heard of a seventh-year guy.
I mean, that's the first for me. I doubt I'll see another one coming up this year because – I mean, he got the COVID eligibility year after he was injured all 2020. And he's also like, if you guys were watching the game today, that's the type of guy that you're rooting for. Like, it sucked that he got the loss out of today. Like, he pitched way too good to get a loss out of this one. But that's the nature of a game, like what happened here today. But he's sitting there at, let me get the digits right. 5'10", 221. That's not 221. That's about 241 that he was packing out there. That's an old school type of guy that he's just slinging some 84 mile per hour fastballs with a great curveball at 70 and a couple of changeups in there to right-handers that has had him baffled all day long. Those are the types of guys that, frankly, I get a kick out of seeing, especially when they're succeeding like they were today. It was great to see that, and it was great to see the Pirates win even in spite of that here today.
And Corey, how about the fact that
I had a question for Bubba real fast, Dave, and then I'll shut up and not talk anymore. Bubba, how many years was Patrick Pinckney at East Carolina?
Six.
He was a 6-year guy because he was there. He was there. Let's see. I want to say
04 to 09.
Okay, it seemed like forever. It really did.
Yeah, because he spanned John Thompson and then Holtz.
Yep. All right. I was going off topic, but topical.
No doubt. With the Pirates, one thing I want to ask Corey, what do you think? I know people may be laughing at me on social media, but I'm pointing out that there's a good chance we'd be in the top five this weekend, this coming week. What do you think for the Pirates?
I think there's an outside shot at it. Again, they've done what they've needed to do. You know, Vanderbilt drops two games this weekend, so they will, take a little bit of Ole Miss drop two, but they drop two to Arkansas. And I actually don't know if they drop two, because that was a crazy game earlier today. It was a 4-run lead for Arkansas the ninth, but Ole Miss erased an 11-0 deficit in that game. I don't know if they'll be in the top five. That they have proven what they've needed to prove to be a top five team in some publications' eyes, and others. There's one that still has them, I think, at 15. It's a finicky thing, the college baseball polls that exist out there. There are about 40. I'm surprised you guys don't have one yourself. And so, East Carolina, from everything I've seen, is a top five team in the nation. That doesn't mean they will be in the polls come tomorrow. They might be. They're sitting ninth in D1 baseball right now. It'd be quite a jump to get into the top five, but they did what they needed to do this weekend. We'll see tomorrow, but I can tell you this, whatever D1 baseball or collegiate baseball or the baseball writers, Baseball America has to say, I know what I've seen in 31 games so far this year, and I know this is one damn good baseball team.
Who else is the 15th, Corey? I don't keep up with the polls like I used to. I remember it used to always seem like the NCBWA, I guess that's the writer's poll, used to always have us low.
I think it's collegiate baseball that has them still in the mid-teens, I think. One has at 11. One of them has us at 8, I believe. I think that's Baseball America has us at 8. And then there's a College Baseball Nation that exists. That's just a kind of a social media entity that has the Pirates at 3 right now. I don't know who runs that. But, there are so many polls, and it's great to see the Pirates sit where they are. They will be, in their 51st consecutive week of being ranked here coming up this week. Like, that says something about what this program is right now under Cliff Godwin. But when push comes to shove, the only thing they can control is going out on Friday and taking care of Houston on their first road series in a long time. So, they'll see the rankings, no doubt. It'll be promoted, no doubt. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things.
No.
Corey, something else I wanted to call attention to, here in recent weeks, you've seen some improvement by Zach Agnos. He's been getting on base a lot with walks. He has to be near the top in that category, I think close to 25 or so. But this weekend, he was 5 out of 13 and had a double. And then he also had 4 walks. So reaching base, 9 of 17 plate appearances.
Yeah, and I'm trying to do the math here quick in terms of conference play. But he's been on, I think, 18 times in 8 games in conference play from what I'm gathering in front of me here. Maybe there's one or two off in terms of trips to the plate or trips on base for Agnos. And on top of that, I think he showed maybe the slickest glove he's shown as a Pirate this weekend. He made some incredible stops over at third, especially in the Saturday and Sunday games this weekend. So, it's interesting. I think when the discussion kind of started kicking up that maybe Lane Hoover would return for this weekend, there might have been a little bit of focus on, well, has Zach Agnos done enough with the bat to kind of, keep a regular spot in the lineup? But he's certainly done enough with the glove, and he's been drawing walks to get on base. But now the bat's here. Like now he's barreling up everything. He's driving balls and backing up outfielders and getting on base. And now his speed, which hasn't been able to be used a lot so far this year, that's being utilized. He stole a couple of bags this weekend. So, to see him take this next jump up, it's hard not to be really, really excited about what the team has shown us here over the last 2 weeks in this 9-game homestand. And right in the middle of it is number 14. He should not go overlooked with what he's done here.
And Corey, let's go now to the, we have the PGX gloves.com player of the game and pitcher of the game. And there was a lot of, there was a lot of tough choices here this week.
I don't know who the choices are. Bubba usually clues me in a little bit here, but I'm looking at the series here as well, trying to think of who you guys might pick, and I honestly don't know who might be on your radar. I think I got the player of the week, but I'm not sure who you might have as the pitcher of the week.
Yeah, for pitcher of the week, this guy, like Coach Godwin mentioned in today's post-game press conference, Tyler Smith had his best outing of the year. Tyler Smith went 5 2/3, one run. It was earned on 7 hits, 3 strikeouts, and a walk on 91 pitches in those 5 2/3. So even though we didn't get the win, excellent outing by Tyler Smith, and congratulations to him.
You know, when you started leading into that, Bubba, I didn't think you were going to say Tyler Smith, and he's warranted with the honor. Because you're right, he pitched great today, and, you know, he left one up to Alec Trella in the 6th inning. But other than that, he was straight up dicing by and large today. I thought Cam Colmore was going to be your guy, to be honest with how you were leading into that, with what he did today, with what he did in Game 2 on Friday night as well. So, you know, that kind of speaks again to what we've been talking about, what this Pirate pitching staff and just so many guys they can turn to here to get the job done, where even you were leading into a guy who threw today, and I still was thinking about the wrong guy.
Yeah, and Cam Colmore, I think on the weekend, you mentioned that outing on Friday, so I think combined he went like 4 1/3, maybe 3 hits and 6 Ks, and without issue and a free pass, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 6 Ks, 2 hits, 4 1/3 for Colmore, and what were two pretty stressful situations he was in. So, yeah, I mean, listen, I am all for the Tyler Smith selection here, but I think that just speaks again to how many guys pitched their tails off here this weekend.
And we're going to go now to the pgxgloves.com player of the week. And I think there was obviously some candidates in there, Bubba, but who do we go with?
Yeah, we went with Bryson Worrell. Before I talk about the week Bryson had, you mentioned those other candidates you had in Norby, doing what Norbs does, 8 hits, some extra base hits mixed in there as well as you would expect. You had Thomas Francisco. He had a multi-hit performance in all 4 games, going 2 for 5, and then 3 hits, 2 hits, 2 hits. And then you had Bryson Worrell. We talked about Bryson earlier. He finished with 6 hits. He had a couple of home runs, had either 1 or 2 doubles, and then I believe you said, Corey, what he drove in 9?
9 runs across the series. He was my pick as well. A close second for Francisco, who finishes 9 for 18 with a home run on the weekend as well. So, but yeah, what Bryson did, and it seemed like every hit that he had was important in some capacity. Every time he was on base was a key part of that game. He can do so much damage with his legs, then getting the bat going as well, getting on base. He's a 5-tool guy, and he showed us all 5 tools here this weekend.
And let's also talk about Connor Norby, 18, his 18 game hitting streak. I believe that's is that 9th all time, if my memory serves me right. And I think Brian Packard has the record in 2019, I know.
Yeah, Brian Packard set the record. I think that was 18. He set the record. Maybe it was 19. Oh, you're right. It was. I don't know. I'll have to go back and check. It's at a 38 game on base streak for Connor Norby.
Right.
And so that's the one I've been keeping strong tabs on here. And, you know, it just doesn't ever seem like he gets fazed by anything. Like, it just, it, I mean, even this weekend, we rattled off a couple of guys, and you mentioned Connor there, but he was like 3rd or 4th on the list of, you know, guys to be highlighted here, when in reality he had 8 hits on the weekend. He was 8 for 17. Like, I mean, that was just another weekend for Connor Norby. The kid's amazing. Like, what he's been able to do with the bat this year and sustain it as now we're through the midway mark of this season. That's otherworldly. And he started getting a little bit of buzz from college baseball media last week as well about player of the year, Kansas season's Golden Spikes Award. And, that needs to continue being trumpeted, because he is that type of player. He is a Golden Spikes candidate, even though he wasn't on the list heading into the year. He needs to be on the radar now.
No doubt about it. And I know, Bubba, did you have anything more for Corey? I know we've gone a little long here tonight.
Yeah, very quickly before we wrap things up, Corey, you kind of already touched on it when you talk about what Wichita State's doing, but what the Shockers are 7-1 now after taking all four from Houston, and they took three out of four from the Cougars last weekend down in Houston. Very odd situation there where you're playing the same team eight consecutive games. And then I know you had one series this weekend that was postponed because of COVID. And just talk about the other results around the league and those other two series.
Yeah, I mean, I will be fascinated to see what Houston looks like in person coming up this weekend, because there's no doubt. I mean, it took 2 weeks, and they went from kind of bottom of the, bottom half of the league and a little bit uninspiring to they're far and away the biggest disappointment right now. Now, will they change a little bit, seeing someone different for the first time in a couple weeks? I don't know how the schedule worked out where they saw Wichita on back-to-back weekends like this. That is not good. And Houston got, they didn't just get beat this weekend in Wichita. They got hammered this weekend. Like, no game was close. And that is alarming for a team that is as high quality and well coached as that one usually is year in and year out. So they have a great Friday guy. Robert Gasser is a stud leading their rotation. They have a couple big bats in the middle of their lineup. Tyler Belimovic, Kyle Lovelace are really solid in the middle of that order. What's happened around that? That's the biggest question I have, and I'm going to be able to see it here coming up this weekend. But Wichita has found some pitching, some frontline pitching. They have always had offense, and they have shown it here in the first 2 weeks. So right now, as Kyle alluded to, there are two horses pulling away right now. Will that change when the Shockers go to New Orleans this coming weekend and see Tulane, who now has a week off due to USF's COVID situation? I don't know. But week three is going to be a fascinating one. And it's also going to be – listen, Cincinnati and Memphis are going to be seeing each other. That doesn't strike you initially as an interesting matchup. But one of those two teams – is going to be pushed clear out of sight after this weekend. It will not take long in conference play. Memphis is 1-7. Cincinnati grabbed a couple of wins over UCF. They salvaged one to earn a split earlier on today against the Knights. So they are 2-6. But after this weekend in Memphis between those two, one team's going to be out of view. It doesn't take that long this year with this conference setup. So keep an eye on that one as well. And hopefully, fingers crossed, USF gets back on the field to rematch with UCF this weekend, because if they don't get back on the field, if they're still battling COVID here, then they're automatically sent down to eighth in the conference tournament standings, because they'll miss 25% of their season here. It happens like that. We're not out of it. We're not out of the woods yet. And USF has found that out here, unfortunately. So week three is going to be a fascinating one, not just because East Carolina hits the road for the first time.
Well, it's going to be an interesting time. Obviously, 2 weeks down as far as the conference. We have six more weeks to go until we go to Clearwater. It'll be an interesting race, no doubt, Corey. Before we let you go, Houston is going to be a great matchup. We'll see how the Pirates do down there. I hope you have safe travels, my friend. Appreciate you very much. And I just want to tell you that you are one of the best in the county, in Pitt County, for play-by-play voice.
Thank you. This podcast, one of the best in Pitt County as well. I am honored to be a part of it, and thank you for the compliment. Dave, I'm glad you're okay.
Thank you.
Bubba, good to talk to you. Kyle, au revoir. He has departed. No, always a pleasure, gentlemen. I know I won't be with you next weekend as I travel back to Houston, but I will be talking with you down the road at some point.
No doubt. Next week we'll have Coach O and Trent Brick for extra innings, so that'll be fantastic. We'll talk to Coach O more about, I guess, the selection committee process. We'll be doing that, folks. But a lot of people have a lot of questions. So nobody better than the man that's been in that room many, many times that works for it. You said that on Friday night. I remember Corey listening to the broadcast. So we'll look forward to that. Again, safe travels. Thank you so much. And before we let you go, as always, how can people find your work?
They can find me at Corey Glore on Twitter and Instagram. You can go to the Pirate IMG Twitter account to find some highlights from this past weekend. There were a lot of them. It was a very exciting weekend, pulling out four wins. So make sure you go back and listen to that. I got a website out there. I got a Facebook out there. And just say hi whenever you see me. I'm around.
All right. All right, man. Hope you have a great night. Appreciate you as always, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
See you later. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Corey Glory, play-by-play voice of the Pirates for ECU Baseball. And, but before we go, I want to remind fans, PGX Gloves has everything. We want to make sure that we give the love to Kaz. He was back on our show on Thursday night, and we appreciate Kaz for all that he does for the show. PGXGloves.com. They have custom baseball gloves, batting gloves, personalized stuff. I got my daughter, Mackenzie, some batting gloves personalized recently, some red ones. The youth, she picked the Eye of the Tiger, so she loves those batting gloves. We have football gloves, golf gloves, swag. So anyway, appreciate you guys so much. We're going to get out of here. Thanks to Next Level Training Center as well for sponsoring Extra Innings. You've been watching Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night. We will once again talk East Carolina Pirate Baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!